should have been, it was regulated at least electronically by yesterday. Yeah, there are copies, and those who are still using paper. All right, so members, you are given an opportunity to consider the agenda and make your views or suggestions. None? Can we agree then that this is the agenda for this meeting? Agreed?
Yes, I propose, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Voronov. Seconder? Thank you, Honourable Mutashuping. Then we go to apologies. Any apology that we need to note or that has been received? Yes, Pat? Honourable Mutelez has submitted an apology, and Honourable Brayton. Oh, okay.
And then Honourable Beertman will be 30 minutes late.
Thank you, Arul. Kalim.
Okay, EFF Commander in Chief is coming. He's on his way.
Okay.
The President. Sure.
All right. We are then we have noted all of those apologies, and the non-elected president that is still coming. Anyway, number three.
Chair, I'm objecting. The president of EFF is an elected president.
Oh, of the EFF, all right. Yes. No, you just said the president, so I wasn't sure, because I have a president that is elected. Anyway, thanks. Number three, it's an update on the service providers report on written submissions on the amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution. We, my co-chairperson will do the presentation on this report, and he will give the background and the context of this agenda item as well. Over to you, co-chair.
Chairperson, before we proceed with that presentation, I think it is perhaps very important, if you allow me, to ask the question that shouldn't we perhaps discuss the matter of what we read in the newspapers last Sunday about the report being leaked to the NEC, because I don't think that we should proceed in deliberating on this report if we don't have clarity exactly when was the report received by whom and whether there is any truth in the matter that the NEC actually had sight of it before this committee.
The co-chairperson will then respond. I'm not sure whether it's a matter for that to be added to the agenda. We'll just discuss it to explain. Honourable Carter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Jane, I think there's something else that we just also need to look at, because we were clearly told this is a procurement process, and we need to find out what process was followed to have a specific service provider.
All right. We will deal with those issues just now. Co-chair? Honourable Front?
Chairperson, you stipulated the agenda for this meeting. And then before we started this meeting, you asked for submissions onto the agenda. And no one raised an additional issue to the agenda. And then they wanted to discuss something that is on the agenda when you have requested them to make submissions on the agenda, and they never did so. It's opportunism. Let us not discuss things that are not on the agenda. And of course, if there are issues that require the attention of this committee, let people put that in the agenda, but we've already adopted the agenda. We're not in some thoughtful discussion here, or some bare old discussion. We just want to raise any topic without process. So can we, if people want to raise whatever issue, no one is barred from raising whatever issue, They must submit in the agenda because there's a process of finalizing the agenda. Let us not be taken advantage of. Please.
Chair Swan. Honourable Carter, followed by Honourable Swan.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just for clarity, it is on the agenda as item number 3.
Okay, thanks. That's why we agreed that we will deal with the matter, because we thought that you are raising questions before we table, before we present the report, because then as we interact with the report, those matters could have easily raised. And now you've helped us. The chair, co-chair will also cover your responses on the item. Co-chair?
Thanks very much, Chair. Let's deal with the second item, the procurement. I do think that Honourable Carter will be aware that public representatives don't and shouldn't get involved in procurement, and that's exactly what happened. We didn't get involved in procurement as public representatives. If there's a query around the procurement, then I think you should take it up with the powers that be in the parliamentary admin. But certainly nobody here got involved in any form or shape in the allocation and or awarding of the contracts. The truth of the matter is that we heard it when we were in the field. All of us heard about it in the field. None of us knew about it before, so I'm hoping that clarifies that. The second issue around about the leaked report, I also do think that we can't as Parliament be led by media reports. The truth of the matter, Honourable Member, is that there was no document leaked. The first time a document surfaced was when you received it yesterday in the electronic version. That's the first time the document was made public. So I don't think that we should be led by media speculation, and if the media has got any facts, let them put it on the table. The truth of the matter is nobody had received the report, and I'm hoping that that puts it to bed, unless members have got information otherwise. But there was no media, not a big part, there was no report that was made public to anybody. I'm hoping that we can carry on, Chair. Honourable Swart.
Chair, thank you. You made the statement that we heard it in the field, but we discussed that here, the outside service provider being appointed, and I raised a concern as to whether each one of us would be applying our mind to the submissions that we did. That's noted on record. So I think maybe I do understand the time passes, a lot has happened, but it was definitely discussed here, the outside service provider, and that is a concern about how we are going to apply our minds to each written submission. So that we can discuss as we discuss the report, Chair. It's not a big issue. Thank you.
But I don't have a debate here, but I don't understand what is the problem with the awarding of an outside provider, because even the PFMA says public reps can't get involved in that process. And if indeed we took a decision that we would get involved as politicians, that decision was inconsistent with how we go about supplying people. So I'm not sure. But I don't get involved in it. I mean, the committee
can take a decision. Sorry, Chair, you just gave information. We didn't apply our minds. We didn't say we're going to involve it. You just told us that an outside provider would be provided through a procurement process. So I'm not debating the issue with you. You just gave us information at that stage. And that's all. That's it. We're not debating the issue. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. The committee, we reported to the committee from the management that this is how, and the committee endorsed our recommendation that we will endorse. So we don't understand what is referred to as apply our mind, because that means we considered the service provided. It may mean that. It may mean that we got involved with who is the person, what are the terms of reference. That certainly we were not involved in doing that as public reps, and that's what we're trying to explain to the committee. I think, Co-Chair, let's proceed.
May I just clarify what I mean by applying our mind? I'm talking about the submissions. I'm not talking about the awarding of a procurement tender. You gave us information that would be done through the processes. We're not involved in that. I agree with you. My concern was us applying our minds to the submissions. That's all, just as an issue of clarity. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah. The only format of applying our mind in Parliament is consideration of submissions, and that will take place. Let's proceed, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chair. Honourable members have got a document that is headed Report on Emerging Trends. That's what we're talking to. And we, I don't know, members have got hard copies? Yes, members have got hard copies. And we're not going to talk to every page of this document because it is work in progress, and as we go on, we'll talk about it. But obviously, slide number one just gives the background. The slide that is headed introduction really talks about our mandate, and I don't think we need to go through that. Second slide, the background again talks about our mandate that was adopted in the House. I think the first slide I want to talk to is the one, the next slide that says background continued. Just to indicate, honourable members, that this progress report that we're talking to talks to 149,886 submissions that have been processed thus far by the end of last week. So it's work in progress. So this is work done on 149,866 submissions, and these are submissions from across the board. Those that came from political parties.
Honorable Fontana.
Thank you, Chair. I don't seem to have it, the document that the court chair is referring to. I do not have the document that the chair is referring to. This is what I've got. This is what I picked up from there. I don't think I need members' assistance here. I need the staff.
Yeah. You need a copy. They will give a copy.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks, Chair. Honourable Fontana, you got a copy? You have? All right. I was saying, honourable members, that it's work in progress. This is the work that was done by the service provider. And it is 149,866 written submissions that have been analysed as at the end of last week. So it's work in progress. The remainder of the submissions are being analysed as we speak, and hopefully those submissions will be concluded by the end of the month. And only after the remainder have been analysed can we come back and say the actual number of submissions that we received was this amount, because they're busy going through them. You'd also recall, honourable members, that we took a decision that submissions that we can't trace the author, whether it's email address or whatever, will be discarded. So that exercise has been done. And as I said, this is a progress report that will be revised by the time we get to next week. We'll give you an update as it comes along, but the service provider is working as we speak. Just in terms of the emerging trends, the slide that talks about demographic information, I think the next one, I don't know, it doesn't have slide numbers, but it says demographic information. Of the 149,886 submissions, just over 60,000 of those submissions are of the view that the Constitution mustn't be amended. The Constitution must be reviewed, I beg your pardon. And 89,327 say that the Constitution should not be amended. And there were 402 undecided. In pie chart form then, 59% think that the Constitution is fine, 40% think that the Constitution needs to be amended, and 0.2 or 0.3% undecided. Honorable Breitenbach, are you with us? Thank you. The next slide breaks down the 149,000 by province. I'm not going to read it because honorable members have it there, but the 149,000 by province, I think the only point that I wanted to raise there is that for interest, 775 submissions came from outside of the country, but honorable members have the numbers there. The next slide then breaks down that 149 by province, by those that support and those that don't support, and the undecided. So that's really just a repetition, but in a different form, of the 149. Then this is, I think, where the analysis started, honorable members. What we tried to do from the report that was given was to pull out the trends that were raised by the submissions. And we tried to break them into those that said they want to change and those that said they don't want to change. And as I said, this will obviously be work in progress and could become bigger as we finish. But the high-line trends, again, for those that don't want to, or those that think that the Constitution is fine, talk to the fact that the Constitution in its current form already allows for expropriation without compensation, the arguments they use. They talk about the loss of investment, donor fear. They talk about the risk of junk status, if we go ahead, job losses and threat to food security and so on. Another trend that came out is also the trend around that this exercise, instead of uniting the nation, is actually dividing the nation. They also spoke to the importance of transparency when we do the land, or the land reform process should be transparent. They also pick up issues around if there was to be expropriation, then it must prioritize state-owned land. Another trend from all these 149,000 is that they feel that this is just an electioneering gimmick. Others feel that instead of amending the Constitution, we should seek different solutions to the land reform program other than amending the Constitution. And then, of course, the issues around the fairness or otherwise of amending it to allow for expropriation without compensation, taking into account that people have invested in the properties, they've got bonds, they've already started paying rates and taxes, or continue to pay rates and taxes, and the injustice of losing the property that they own. They also speak about security of tenure, and that legally they are the owners of the property. Some of the trends that come out of that category also talks to the current use of the land. And they also raise issues around the reason why the land reform process is a failure is because of corruption and incapacity of the state and the risk of land grabs. And yet another trend is there's a thinking that maybe this exercise needs further investigation before this committee reaches its conclusion. And then finally, honorable members, are those that are what we categorized as against, talk to the custodianship of the land. Will those that are given the land have the ability to work the land? And of course, they make reference to failed land reform programs in countries such as Zimbabwe and Venezuela. And then we move to those that supported it. Some of the trends that came out are the whole issue around the unfairness of how the land was acquired in the first instance, and people feel that there must be amendments to fix up that injustice. the whole issue around who really owns the land, is it the Khoisan, is it the rest of us, and so on, and that's why there must be changes. They also talk to the fact that June 1913, in fact, is an inhibitor to certain sectors, because they think that it was way before June 1913 that we need to go back and correct in terms of injustices. Another trend is that the constitution must be amended, because the constitution in its current form is in fact an impediment to land reform, and they are therefore citing that the constitution must be amended so that we can fix up those injustices. Then there are the issues that were raised by those that feel the constitution must be amended, honourable members. They raised issues around the fact that farm labourers and so on lived on the land all the years, and in other words, the insecurity of tenure, being forcefully removed from farmlands and where they've worked. Illegal removals by new farm owners come onto the land and they kick out the current workers. Also the issue around informal settlements, around security of tenure. So it's not really only about farms, but it's also about residential. Those are the security of tenure matters that they've raised. And again, those that feel that the constitution must be amended also argue around nation building, but whereas those that were saying don't change it, it divides, these that are arguing for the changes are actually saying that it will unite the nation. It's about bringing back the dignity of those that lost their land, and it's about reclaiming our culture. So both sides talk about nation. One talks about nation building, and another talks about dividing the nation. So those came out in both sets. And also the issue around land use came out in both sets. Those that feel the constitution must be amended are saying it gives you security of tenure. It's not just about farms. It's about land for residential purpose, for job creation, and so on. So those emerged on both sides. So really, honourable members, and these are not new, because these are the matters that also came out in our public hearings. So it really is confirmation of what South Africans are saying, but these are the written submissions. Chair, can I end by saying, once again, this is only 149,000. There's probably another 300,000 that would come, but I think these cover substantially the areas of substantial argument. Many of the others we'll find, and I don't want to preempt the authors of the report, but will be those that are cut and paste, where, you know, the same argument 1,000 times, as we've seen in some of the submissions. So, Chair, I want to leave it at that in terms of, and also just to indicate, Chair, that so that we preempt everything else, we have taken a decision that once we're done with this report, all the submissions will be made public. I think Honourable Breitenbach at one point had asked that what happens if members want to go and test one or two of the written submissions. I think that is still on. These submissions are not only in hard form, but they're in Word document, I mean in emails and in memory sticks. So we'll have to decide if members want to go and verify the facts, how do they verify them. But it's really a repetition of what was happening in the written in the public submissions, Chair. I want to leave it at that point. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Co-Chairperson. Honourable members, yeah, it's before you. Can we get hands? In that order.
So thanks, Chair. In your presentation, when you speak about the written submissions, and then you've got a section of demographic profile of the demographics, I thought you're going to give a breakdown of the demographic profile of the people who made the submissions. Of who made the submissions? What is the racial composition of those people? What is the gender balance? So that we check if the written submissions are a microcosm or a reflection of the population of South Africa, because return submissions also were through emails, and you know who has got access to emails in South Africa. So that thing of 80,000 vis-a-vis 60,000, my retelling of that story of who has got access to emails, because our people do not have access to emails, but also the story of reputations in terms of the submissions. And then when you then deal with public hearings, you have got a subtitle on demographics, but you do not mention the numbers like you did on the written submissions. It is inconsistent in terms of what otherwise we seek to achieve. And I think fairly those of us, all of us who were in the public hearings, would know that the audiences in the public hearings was somehow a microcosm of South Africa's racial demographics. I'm not sure about gender, but in terms of racial composition, majority of the times it was relatively balanced, and it could be a much more representative gauge. And of course, we appreciate that we're not now running a referendum. It's not a referendum, it's not about numbers, it's about what is the substance of the issue that we're dealing with. But just wanted to appeal for a consistent presentation of the findings thus far. But it looks also that someone rushed to announce the number of submissions prior to this process being consolidated, because the president says that it's almost a million, but it looks like we're not going to get to any million. Even half of that. Someone just fed wrong information that there's a million submissions that are coming on this question, and it's not a million. It's lesser than that, and the trend is showing of who is making those submissions. Short check.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to start off with firstly saying, well, you know, we are basically, we will only be able to continue once we've got the remainder of the 300,000 submissions, you know, if we can see the rest of that report ready to get it through. But something that really concerns me is the fact that Honourable Smith mentioned that the ones that don't have, that some emails are going to be discarded. If you go and look at Parliament under what a submission is, okay, and I read it this morning. It's very clear that there's no specific way that a submission needs to be. If there's an email address, and that person sent an email, and there's an IP address, that is a legal document, and you cannot discard it. They might have the same argument, okay, but it still should still be part of your report. I want to also just say, you know, ask the following. If, for example, I send the email or you send the email or we all send the email from Cape Town, how are we going to know that Deirdre Carter at COFESA is actually residing in KwaZulu-Natal? So how are we getting those figures? That's just a little bit of a concern as well. You know, how did we get to these figures? Another point I wanted to just mention, we've had 33 and not 34 public hearings, because the final one was two groups together in Cape Town. If we look at the average, we had about 75 on average people that spoke a day. So we can look at 2,500 people that spoke at these public hearings on behalf of the 57 million South Africans. It's very important that we cannot now, when we decided on the process, we advertised that this is how the process is going to be. Those who do not have access to an email were not stopped. Every South African has got a right to do a submission. You could post it, you could hand deliver it, you could send it via courier. You have options to do that. One of the things that's really been coming out is the pre-1913 when it comes to security of tenure. And that is where we found that we've actually had all the different kings from the Khoisan community that came out with the same matter of the pre-1913. Whether they agreed or whether they disagreed with the amendment of the constitution, that was one argument that we kept on seeing. I think and then the next is just, Chair, it's taken us, what, 6 weeks longer to get to the 149,000. When do we think the other 300 is going to take place? And besides that, just one very important one, before anything is discarded, they need to be there for us to have a look at as members of this committee. Thank you.
Honourable Swartz.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to know how many submissions were discarded and what criteria, in addition to what we decided on, if one can't trace the person that made the submission, how we can. We don't have to get that figure now. We know the process is ongoing, so there might be more submissions that are discarded. I think that whilst it is important to remember your words that this is not a referendum, but it is important to note what the president of the ANC said, that 80% through the process that he's heard the voice of the people. Now we see, with the written submissions, we see 90,000 are not in favour of the amendment, 60,000 are in favour, and if you add 2,000, you can see again that there is a predominance of folk that are not in favour of the amendment of the Constitution. But bear in mind, again, that the process is still ongoing. But it is regrettable that the president of the ANC made that announcement whilst we were still in the process, and he's fully entitled to as the leader of the ANC. But again, we see that it was premature. So, Chair, we would like an indication of from service provider, when will they finalise the rest of these submissions so that we can understand how we can deal with the process going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Tlashumbe.
Thanks, Chairperson. I thought I'm in a parliamentary process, and when what happens in political parties are political party issues and cannot be debated here in a parliamentary process, and there should be a separation, because here we are dealing with facts. We're not dealing with rumors, perceptions, and allegations. Chairperson, before I get into the...
Chairperson, just have a point of order.
What order?
Honourable Carter, let's hear your point of order.
Chair, this is no rumours. The president of a country went on national TV and a constitutional court ruled that you, when you take your oath of office, is not responsible to your political party, you are responsible to the citizens of the Republic of South Africa.
Out of order.
Okay, no.
Not a point of order.
Honourable Carter, please, you just...
You made a point here, no one interrupted her. She must be quiet and listen to other people.
No, it's true. That's what we are telling her now, that she's out of order. Honourable Tlashumbe, you are still on the floor.
No, Chair. I think I read from what the co-chair was presenting that this was a preliminary report, and I am not having the advantage of the terms of reference that was given to the service provider. Now, looking into this report, Chair, and you look at it holistically, you would realize that I would not want to question the authenticity of this report, because it's based on numbers, not on substance, like Honorable Floyd said. Now, it looks like we are in a referendum mode, where this is the number, this is that number. But I take it that it is fine for now. That is the route that it has been taken, to say so much percentages for this and that. And I'm not sure what, if this is a preliminary report, how did they come to a determination to say exactly these are the numbers? Because if you are still in the process of completing the work, you would not come to reach the ultimate number that is exact. However, Chair, I think if you look into the second report, if we are not there, the second report diverged from the first one, even the format. You are giving the demographic breakdown to to say, so many people participated in the submissions, and this is the percentage. That is not done on the second submission on the public hearing. If you've got to look at the numbers and be biased towards numbers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Malema, you're recognized.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. It's very interesting that the proxy war has already started, even before we are in the real issues. My concerns on this report are the following. We've got 775 people who are from outside of South Africa. Who are these people? This is an internal matter. Are these South African voters? Are these South African citizens? Is it Japanese, Australians, or Americans? What is their citizenship status with in relation to South Africa? Specifically the point. Where is their local standing in the whole process? We're listening to people who are entitled. I know we have got missions and so on. I'm aware of that. I know we've got South African citizens who live all over. But I think it is important that we get a precise report on who are these people, their status, one by one. Not a summary. One by one. That's number one. Now, the security of tenure that is referred to by those who are in favor of the amendment, are they referring to the standard 30-year principle that if you reside on somebody else's property for 30 years uninterrupted and there is no legal process that is instituted to remove you, therefore you are entitled to claim that land as yours? Is this what they're referring to, or is it something else? Because that's one of the principles of the South African law. Because this affects the farm dwellers, some of whom have been there for over 30 years. And this is why we need specific legal explanation on that, because that's the foundation of the South African law. Number three, and this speaks to the processes. Do we have, I missed out on all the meetings before we went on the road shows, public hearings, sorry. Do we have a predetermined process that we're going to follow in dealing with the submissions? Because some people are already talking to the contents here, and others are talking to the process. You know, so that's why I want to know. And if we do not have a prescribed method of dealing with the submissions, I feel that there is a need for us to take one step back and decide on how. Because just parliamentary processes and procedures alone may not be helpful here. That's why I want to know if we have got a predetermined processing route that was decided as to how we're going to deal with this. We have got a number of, multitude of issues to raise, but I don't want to speak out of turn or preempt certain things. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Malema.
Chair, thank you very much. I think that as the leadership of the committee, you ought to be very careful. I think you were set up by this company which is looking at these things. And I'm not sure if that company is even vetted. And what are the views of the directors of the company? And what is the composition of the company? This is a setup. They say to you, this is the number of people who supported this, number of people who didn't support this. Even when you said, this is not a referendum. And to show that they are setting us up and they've got a position, that's why their friends here are reminding us, although it's not a referendum, but these are the numbers, these are the numbers saying, these are the numbers saying. That was the whole idea, to try and seek to create an impression that majority of the submissions do not agree with this. Even when we said numbers do not matter, why put numbers if numbers do not matter? That's number one. Number two, they don't put the numbers of the public hearings because they don't favor their narrative.
So there are no neutral people in this country, particularly on this issue. And to just give a company like that, we should have subjected this to the parliament staff, and where the need arise, employ extra human resource to focus specifically on the submissions to avoid sending the work into the people who've got views on these matters. The pure setup, and the best thing to do is, let's get the company to come and present. Let them come here. Because we shouldn't speak to you as if you have done this. An impression should not be created that you have done this. You were set up by some forces which must be vetted. Some of them you may find their views on Facebook, the directors of the same company. If we're to go deep into who owns this company, what are their views? So the simple thing you want to look at is favorable submissions through written form and oral submissions which Floyd described the composition. The story that people can email, people can post is too elitist. And people of a certain ethnic group or racial group may not understand what we're talking about. They don't know that our people, to buy a stamp, to put on an envelope and go to town to submit that letter, you think it's as easy as that because that's how you grew up. If you know the pain of deciding between an envelope, the stamp, and the taxi money to go and deposit that letter, and the bread, you won't come to this parliament and say that nonsense of saying people must go to post office. It's very difficult. Every cent amongst our people matters the most. Their priorities are not as being described here. But if they were to be given an opportunity where they don't have to spend a cent, they will express themselves without fear or favor. They did that now. So it is not true that actually these written submissions are a true reflection of the feelings of our people. Yes, they will be taken into consideration, but no one should use this to try and pursue a certain narrative, Chairperson. So, but my submission is that let's get the company to come here and make a presentation, especially when they come to make the final submission. And then the story that a person has sent the email in KwaZulu-Natal, yet he comes from Limpopo, I mean, it's not an issue that. It means you send the email being in KwaZulu-Natal. These are the emails we got from KwaZulu-Natal. It may not come from KwaZulu-Natal, but this is what we're trying to demonstrate, that these views came from all corners of the country, and these are the number of people from this corner of the country and all that. So whether that person comes from KwaZulu-Natal or not is really immaterial. But again, these people who submitted from outside South Africa, who are they? What are their interests? The company can answer that, not you. You must sit with us this side because you too want to understand what you are dealing with. And therefore you can only understand if we get the real company to come and make presentation and take ownership of some of the things, including campaign. It's not a secret that AfriForum ran a campaign where people send same email. What does it account for, that email? The second thing is that people read the, what you call, website things there where people were making submission to their own website, answering certain questions which are put differently to try and pursue a particular narrative. What do those things account for? Is it the same as an individual genuine submission, or is it treated differently? We will deal with that once the final submission comes. But Chair, what I'm asking from you is that you must not be deterred, because how you started, you can see that there is an intention to derail this process, and they don't want it to finish. But they are in minority, and they will not succeed. They need to know that any form of derail is actually undemocratic. If you've got the facts and you are not scared, don't come with derailing tactics. Allow the process to unfold, let's go and compile a final report and debate in the assembly and vote in the assembly. This thing of unnecessary delay is not going to help you. The people have spoken, the people continue to speak, and Parliament will take a decision. No amount of delay will actually help you.
Yeah. Co-chairperson? All right. Let's take to those two heads. Pumla, you first, and you, Honourable Member, you follow. Pumla. Doc, yeah, you will follow.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. I just wanted to ask if you had the official or any of the people who monitored the service provider during their work, or we just allowed to carry on their own. That's the first question. The second thing is that I think there are two other things which we need to be added for the emerging trends, and which perhaps by mistake they were left out. There was a point on security of tenure, under security of tenure, where there was a complaint about the denial by farmers to allow government to offer services to farm workers, like security. On the emerging trend.
Lodgett.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been listening to the comments made, and something that I pick up that is concerning, and I know earlier Honourable Smith said that the procurement matter is not for the politicians to be involved in. My problem is that it has now been alluded to that the whole issue... Can you hear? Okay. Okay. The whole issue of the terms of reference, because that is not necessarily a staff matter. Who decided on the terms of reference, and could we have the terms of reference? Because this is the crux of the whole report. And I would also like to know the report that we receive now in terms of the submissions. Is there a specific format that will be requested, because I understand that this is more or less a PowerPoint presentation, but what is the terms of reference and brief for this company in terms of reporting to us? Because we are, quite correctly, this is not necessarily a referendum, but we are looking for cogent arguments, and how will that be portrayed within this report? And also, we will, although not a referendum, we will have to know what kind of support for a particular type of argument that is raised. Thank you.
Honourable Mwabe.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Greetings to colleagues. Chair, I just want to talk to the proposal that has been made. I see we are continuing with the meeting. The proposal that has been made by my colleague, Honourable Malema, the one of calling the company itself to come and face us. I am moving, Chair, to support that idea strongly, because that can give us more answers than questions, as it's happening when we are among ourselves. And I think, Chairperson, it's proper to say we must be able to be cautious in everything we do. Because it's a common cause that in the country, everyone is allowed to go to court. And we know that some are driving us, might be driving us to that corner, where we find ourselves taken to court on the basis of some of the irregularities that we might have committed, knowing or unknowing. So I move to support that, Chair, so that we get everything properly. And also, we should be applying our minds as well on the issue of these foreign submissions. It might be another trend. You know, you might be in Australia, but still have a citizenship of South Africa. Now you say you don't consider that person, you find the chance to go to court. You say you consider that person, there might be some other consequences. So I'm saying there is a lot that we must do, apply our minds carefully in the whole process. But the idea of getting the company to come and get more answers and scrutinize the company itself might assist us a lot, Chairperson. Thank you.
Coach?
No, thanks. Yeah, I think the proposal that has been made is what we must discuss, because if that proposal wins the day, then we don't have to answer any of these questions. If it doesn't win the day, then we can answer the questions. I think honourable members must decide. All I wanted to say to honourable members is that we're working against time, as honourable Malema has said. The work has not been finished by that company. Do we then call them for an interim report, or do we then give them all the space until they conclude it and give them the final report? So it's the timing of the report. But we can, in the meantime, ask for the terms of reference, because we didn't have sight of the terms of reference. We can ask for the detail of the company. That we can do even before they come. Who is the company? What are the terms of reference? Who is supervising them? Because I'm saying that supervision of the work that is being done now is not carried out by us. I would imagine parliamentary staff. So we can do that preliminary work, but the fundamental question is, do we call them for an interim report or do we call them for a final report? And depending on when we call them, it'll affect our program. So I thought we should deal with that thing and maybe look at the program, honourable members, and then work backwards from the proposed program, because then it'll indicate to us the urgency, both from our side and from the side of the service provider. So maybe we can deal with this one and then just deal with the time frames of the program, and then everything else must fit into there. But I see honourable Maile, honourable, oh, everybody wants to speak now on this matter.
Yeah. So it will be Maile, Sultana, Mwabe, but I think the other issues that were suggested were that are quite easy, Chair, to populate what come from Honourable Floyd, to populate in terms of to look at the demographics, make them more fuller and populated. I think the staff should just go back to the service provider and make them populate that even before they come, because that will remain the question. Honourable Maile?
No, thanks, Chair. I support the proposal, and then as to when should we call the company, it might take that maybe we should call them for the interim report so that we don't wait for a lot of gaps to be in the report, so that we can be able to iron out these gaps, and then knowing that going forward we'll be expecting a product that we had an input on. Thank you very much.
Feltana?
Thanks for the opportunity, Chair. The very fact that after you presented the interim report, so many questions have come up, confirms the advisability of the company coming to give us an interim report. But I want to add that in the process, when they come, they might as well respond or reflect on the issues that we have raised so that we don't have to raise them again. That will help us a lot. And then there'll be more wisdom on their part when they come for the final report. Thanks, Chair.
Mwabe, we take note of that.
Yes, Chairperson. No, I was also on the point of interim report, because as they move on, they must take us with their confidence. We have to move together so that we don't complain at the end. So I support that they must come as early as now. Thank you.
Honourable Shivambo.
No, thanks, Chair. So the emphasis is there, and I think we're almost agreeing, all of us now, that we need an interim report from those people. We had said prior to the company being appointed that each submission must have the ID number of the person who's submitting. So that is going to help us in terms of the gender of the people who have submitted, in terms of the age, in terms of the race as well. So the demographics, if the ID numbers, and then we actually say that if a nationality as well, if they're South African and all, and that will help us to then deal with these repetitive submissions by one person. Because it looks like AfriForum employed people to sit in their office in Pretoria to make 100 submissions each per hour. And then we think we've got 80,000 submissions here of people who are saying, no, we must not amend the constitution. I want to find out if some University of Pretoria students who are employed to deal with these issues in that format. One submission, one person. And that can only be verified by ID number. We did say that if there's no ID number, the submission falls off.
Honorable Tabo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I would like to align myself, Honorable Chair, with the immediate speakers before me, very progressive indeed, with all the issues outlined. And then as to by when can we call the service providers, I'll suggest that within 7 days from today, if possible, please. Thank you.
All right, that's noted. To Secretary, to take care of that. We then move to the next presentation.
Oh. We will just do the program. That's it, no other presentation. Just the program. Okay. Yeah, but I think honorable members are saying the reports must be uniformed. So the question that the co-chair is asking is, do you want to get the public hearings interim report now, or do we do them all together? That's the question the chair is asking. It's not the company that did them.
I'm saying that, colleagues, that the public hearings are done by us. We didn't commission them. So this is the interim report on them. The team leader was going to do the presentation. So I don't know whether we need to lump. So that you are able to then suggest further, because still, it's a summary of the public hearings. So I don't know what's the feeling of the members. Honorable Mutla Shopping?
Yeah, Chair, no thanks. You know, as we alluded to the fact that the format of reporting, you know, there was some sort of biasness in terms of the analysis of the both the submissions and the public hearings. So to me, the submission that was made by our officials would create an impression that would fall into a perception that yes, there were so many numbers, and not necessarily going back to the issue of numbers, but to be consistent, if we could follow suit and that report be updated to give us an indication as to what the people have said.
So is that such? Honorable Mutapa and Honorable Bumblan, are you following?
Mine was a class-seeking question. In terms of this report of public hearings, because it appears, I would like to align myself with what Honorable Flochivambo said, because the tone and what everything in this report is similar to this one. So that's why I become now confused when we are to continue. And if I clearly heard you, subject to correction with your respect, Chair, that this report for public hearing was not done by the same service providers which we request for him to appear before this committee, but the tone. And it appears if the template was set for these people to comply the same report. That's why I'm a bit puzzled. Thank you.
And Honorable Bumblan.
I wanted to answer the question you asked about what do we do? Do we call these people, or do we call various stakeholders as soon as possible, or shall we wait for the service provider? I was going to say let them go together, because we don't have time. Can we talk about oral representation by various stakeholders? That.
Is it Honorable Bumblan? The question is it's not what we asked. We were asking on the public hearings.
the other matter, the other report from service providers, we've concluded and resolved on that one, and that is they will come, and we've agreed that we will fit them in the schedule of in the program. And there was even a suggestion that we agreed to that it should be within 7 days. So, right? So, in fact, we think that we'll call a meeting for next week for them to come to present the interim report. Honorable Carter?
I don't understand. Did you not want to know about the oral representation? Did you talk about that?
Yeah, the oral representations are already, the matter is on the agenda, and is on the program also, there is a schedule for them.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so let's take the Honorable Carter, followed by Fultana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm just listening to the comments of our co-members of a committee saying that it looks like both reports are written in the same sort of, you know, giving the same answers. I was just thinking whether it would not be better if we actually have insight into the terms of reference. That will maybe give us also the idea that even for our, you know, for our internal staff that we're dealing with a public hearing itself and getting that report, maybe they were working off the terms of reference that we haven't seen. So maybe if we can get clarity on that. But whether we continue with it today or continue with it next week, I think getting the guidance of actual terms of reference would actually help every one of us. Thank you, Chief.
Fultana.
Thanks, Chair. Time is a luxury we do not have at our disposal. Let's carry on. I haven't had any valid reason why we cannot proceed, you know, with the public hearings. Let's proceed. Stop the debate on whether we do or not. Let's just proceed with it. We don't have much time on our side. Thank you.
Thank you. Just to say, Honorable Carter, that the committee section is responsible for committee meetings, records and reports, which are always prepared by them without interference of us, and then prepared and brought to the committee. The committee consider and improve on the report until they are satisfied and then adopt. So that process of the public hearings, that's what they've embarked upon. We have no clue what notes they took and whatsoever, what reference they use, templates they use. We have no clue. We understand that these are professionals that normally do that in every parliamentary committee proceedings. So I'm getting the fact that the point that we're proceeding with them, presenting they're doing a presentation so far on what they've captured.
Let me help, Chair. I think what we should do, let's close the issue around the service provider. We're going to get the terms of reference to everybody. We will get the demographics of the company to everybody, and we will call them next week Wednesday. So that deals with the first agenda item. There's agreement on that one. So Honorable Carter's issue around the terms of reference will be dealt with when we deal with that one there. That you will get ASAP. The question that is now being asked is, do we continue with the second one? Because that one doesn't have a terms of reference. It was notes taken by our own staff. Do we continue with that one? Because it will also be an interim report. It won't be a final report. It will all be finalized. But the intention was to give us a flavor so that we see the gaps, as we did with the first one, send them back to improve it, and then come with the final report, as opposed to coming with the report at the end, and then we all reject it. I don't think there's any harm in us asking them to spend 15 minutes to give us that report, and we critique it. Agreed?
Dr. Twalo, let's get it.
What I will be doing now is to present the report on the public hearings.
which is mainly the qualitative information that we got throughout the public hearing itself. Just as a way of introduction, that statement, that slide.
Stronger to the mic.
Thank you. Sorry about that. As a way of introduction, this is known to all members that the two houses of parliament actually took the resolution in February and in March this year. And they referred the matter to this committee to conduct on their behalf. But also, the resolutions required the CRC to consult members of the public in doing its work, and it was also required to report to the houses. As a background, is that the Constitutional Review Committee conducted public hearings in all provinces from the 26th of June to the 4th of August 2018. And the aim of the public hearings was to solicit the views of the public as part of the public participation process. And the aim of this report is to present the initial findings from the public hearings. And just on methodology, in terms of what happened before that. Prior to public hearings, this committee had a colloquium on Section 25 of the Constitution on progress made with regards to the implementation of Section 25, and also to understand the successes and limitations of the implementation of this clause. And we also deployed a team of public educators from Parliament to the selected districts to raise awareness of the relevant clauses of Section 25 in order to enable members of the public to engage meaningfully in the discussions during public hearings. And also parliamentary communications team sent out media statements on the public hearings to make sure that the public are aware of this. And the court chairpersons also gave interviews to various media companies. And Parliament took reasonable steps to ensure maximum participation in the public hearings by transporting members of the public to the identified venues. During public hearings, it's important to note that that the guiding framework for public hearings was at least from 11 a.m. to about 4 p.m., but most of the public hearings actually finished after this time, and because of the people who still wanted to give their inputs. And the house rules were also explained to the members of the public so that there is discipline during these public hearings. Section 25 of the Constitution was either read out or copies of the section handed out to people that were actually in the public hearings. So the purpose of the public hearings was again explained to the participants during public hearings. And as many people as possible were given the opportunity to give their input. This slide just gives the dates, the provinces and the towns that were actually visited. I won't dwell much on it at this point in time. However, it would probably suffice to say that we had 34 towns were actually visited during these public hearings, and on average, 3.7 towns per province were actually visited. Coming to the findings, I'm just giving the overview of that. What was said by many people during public hearings is that there was high level of landlessness among the majority of Africans, a legacy of apartheid and colonial dispossession, and that patterns of land ownership in South Africa was actually skewed, mainly towards white people. And participation in agriculture and related value chains was also skewed. There were also divergent views in relation to expropriation without compensation as a mechanism to speed up redistribution, and that government need to redress the injustices of the past at a lower cost to the state, and also to bring more people in the mainstream of South African economy through land reform. And there was also views about the unintended consequences of expropriation without compensation
which included the impact on the economy, job losses, investment stagnation, or the lack of investment in the economy, and that the property is an expansive concept, not only about land, but also about property outside of the land definition. And any amendment should actually take note of that. And mainly they were concerned about housing and people's investment on their properties as well. There was also a feeling that a current market-based land reform program has not helped to redistribute land at scale, and that given the failure of the market-based land reform to expropriate land in the public interest, there were those who said, do not amend the constitution. What is required is law of general application to clarify the matters in section 25. There were also other views to say that take the matters of expropriation to the judiciary for clarification. And lastly here, to introduce amendments that clarify circumstances under which land can be expropriated without compensation and introduce the law of general application. Those who also felt that we need to amend the constitution because under the current provisions, it would be very difficult, if not possible, impossible, to achieve expropriation without compensation. And with regard to tenure arrangements, also there were divergent views around the state custodianship and equitable allocation of use rights. And another thing was to redistribute, to give private property rights through title deeds, and contrasting views about traditional councils as well. Some want them to own land, and others reject that because chiefs never owned land. If you look at the discussion of these findings mainly, is that one, in terms of the agrarian structure inherited from the apartheid system, people were saying about 87% of the total land area was exclusively owned by white population, mostly white owned farmland. On the farms, black families lived as labor tenants, farm dwellers, or farm workers with insecure tenure, and continuously living under threats of eviction. The majority of South Africans were crammed in the 13% of the total land area, mostly the so-called reserves and former Bantu stands. And the legacy of this era is a structural problem where blacks were pushed to the margins of the economy whilst whites dominate the productive sector. Secondly, on land-based identities and rightful owners of land, we found that blacks experienced more than just land disposition. From early land dispossessions in 1652 to the dispossessions and forced removals of the colonial and apartheid government, communities were distorted, and the identities constructed around those communities were interfered with. Land disposition took away people's dignity, for example, communities, households, and individuals' dignity, pride, and sense of being. And dignity is often associated with self and equal worth. Communities have the right to live as autonomous beings and not as subjects of authority of another, and as it is the case with farm dwellers and labor tenants currently. Whites, as beneficiaries of racially based land policies, were allowed to own land in their own right and exchange it in the market as a commodity and accumulated wealth over time. Redressing the inequitable land distribution patterns must result in restoration of rights and dignity for blacks in general. There's also a notion that land must be redistributed to rightful owners. It raises a question about who the rightful owners of land in South Africa are. And there were divergent views again when it comes to that question. For example, the descendants of the Khoi and Sand communities see themselves as the rightful owners, and African communities see themselves as rightful owners too. And the Khoi sons believed that the constitutional limitation of restitution, especially the 1913 cut-off, excluded them from the right to restitution, especially when they look or they see themselves as the rightful owners of the land in South Africa. Then on perspectives on constitutional provisions for expropriation in the public interest and conditions for compensation, there was a group of people who felt that we need to amend the constitution. However, there was a tension in sections 25.1 and 2 regarding the protection of property rights and expropriation subject to compensation. Secondly, section 25.1-3 ties government to the payment of compensation at market value of the property, and therefore a stumbling block to a more affordable and faster land redistribution. And those who argued that the constitution should not be amended felt that section 25.3, compensation must be just and equitable, and the primacy of market value of property is not provided for in the constitution. Section 25.8 says that no provision of this section may impede the state from taking legislative and other measures to achieve land, water and related reforms in accordance with the provision of section 36.1. Sections 25.5, 25.6, and 25.7, which relate to redistribution, tenure reform and restitution, were advanced as key instruments to advance land reform in South Africa. But with section 25.1-3, expropriation without compensation, even for values below market value, would be extremely difficult. The current constitutional order resulted in less than 10% of white-owned farmlands transferred to blacks over 24 years, as opposed to projected 30% by 2014. Some blame the market value approach to land acquisition, the ever-escalating prices of land, suggesting that it is protected in terms of the constitution. Some blame government inefficiencies, and reference to the high-level panel report was made, especially in relation to corruption, capacity constraints of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and the Commission, and also the real-term decline in land reform budget. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, your views on the report, taking hands. Honourable Bumlwane and Lotrit, you fall in that order. Noted, Carter.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think now my contribution comes in two things, so three. One, in the agrarian structures held by the apartheid system, there is this thing that the farmers are denying the government from delivering services, e.g. like health, social services, education and housing to people that are in the farm. I think that was also stressed. I don't know whether you perhaps missed that. Can you add in that? Secondly, I don't know where to put this
threat, it came up quite in our area, threat by foreigner in buying the land. Somebody said, before we know what's going on, we'll be part of China. We'll be more Chinese or Japanese in the country than we had. Secondly, I just wanted to, on your, on page where you said perspective on constitutional provision for expropriation, public interest and condition of compensation, you remember that number three, on your presentation number three. You seem to be very lean on the amend the constitution. You just say tension section 25(1). I don't understand. Maybe I didn't actually understand that. And then you put under not to amend, and you put all these other, some of them I think should have been in the first one, on the question. I don't know whether these fall under do not amend. These are the arguments for do not amend. Do I understand you correctly? And that perhaps there is very little then, very lean on the arguments to amend. There are only two and I fail to understand them. And the others, if they are, they fall under do not amend. Or are there some that are in the do not amend that are supposed to be in the amend, in the argument, it seems to be that, and it's very a bit lean. It would be better if you could you give more on the other side, because there were arguments, for example, of what needs to be done in amend. Others were saying get rid of it altogether. I remember there were some people who said so, and there were some people who talked about it has to be take the land and give it to the state and so on. It doesn't show here. Maybe there is, if we compare notes, we'll probably have those. Thank you.
Just that, members, you're having a question paper, I think, in the NA. At least the NCOP is free, and I don't think you want to leave it to the NCOP to proceed when you are all left. So, and also, this was just, a presentation. The detail of everything will be the report that will then be compiled. I think that let's keep that in mind as we make our inputs. Patrick?
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, just for clarity, maybe it doesn't have to be discussed here. It can be at the following next meeting. More clarity in terms of the public educators that were used and what material that they used to actually go and educate people and encourage them or prepare them for these public hearings, so that we perhaps just have access to that as well. And then just perhaps a comment on semantics. You refer to findings. A finding is something that you almost state as a fact, that was your finding. I would propose that perhaps you look at comments made at public hearings.
Observations. All right, Colonel Carter, we like that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be very short. I just firstly, we had 33 public hearings, not 34. Goodwood was two in one. Then, Chair, I understand the fact that this was just a presentation, because there's a couple of, I think, really important points that I see that I know was raised in every public hearing, and I've attended every single one in Group B. And maybe what we can do is just, once we get the report, actually talk a lot more about it. But one of the very important things that kept on coming up was the constitutionality of a willing buyer, willing seller. And that is something that kept on coming up. Also the call for us to correct the injustices of the past. It wasn't all negative. We're also not talking about the successes that the private sector has started, okay, in land distribution on their own and giving more than 51% share and giving farms. those type of things. So I think just in the report, I mean, I've got an entire list, but I'm not going to go into all of the 150, 160, but if a report can just cover those all. Thank you.
Honourable Shivambu.
So the chair, I think perhaps what we could do is augment this report on the public hearings. So on the section that, for instance, that deals with the amend component, we'll make submissions on the additional risks that came from the grant, because it looks like those that were taking notes did not get like substantially what were the submissions. And we were taking notes, we've got the recording of all those public hearings. So we will make, before this report is finalized, to say that these are the substantial reasons that came from the ground that dealt with the... So we're not going to allow anything to fall on the cracks because of a deliberately incompetent capturing of what the people said on the ground. I think that voice cannot be missed. So we'll make a substantial submission.
Honorable Fultana?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just had this urgent call to take up, so I had to go out. And I hope that what I'm going to touch on is not something that has been covered by another speaker. The ages of the people who spoke are very critical. We're dealing with a constitutional matter here. I tried my best to estimate the ages, and I found that by and large, it was middle-aged to young people who came and contributed. Because these are the people that we are preparing a future for. So I don't know if this report will be able to cover that. I was not at the registration desk, but I would hope that ID numbers of people were captured or something. I don't know what was captured at the registration desk. But I think that's important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think this is what Honorable Shivambu is saying. The document, once it's completed and well, in their own format, and I think Lotrit started to speak to what, you know, they expect. I don't know what the format Parliament uses, but at the time, members will then be able to record, and then that's when you'll be beefing up your substantive arguments on the report and what you heard in the public hearings combined with what you would have read in the written submissions. And so that part where we will argue and disagree, and you know, it is still coming when there is a working document that is produced out of the two processes. But it's fine.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I was saying that Honorable Smith will know that we generally had a problem of capacity from our Parliament staff, from logistics to all types of things, and this report is not shocking the way it is. So the best thing, I don't know if it is possible to get the recordings of those hearings so that we can begin to write our own reports and then submit to the Parliament staff in trying to help them to come up with a bit of a comprehensive report so that we don't allow anything to fall within the cracks like Honorable Shivambu says, because again we have a problem here. She goes to town on those who do not agree, and very brief on for those who agree. So you can see we're dealing with something else here. And I think, I don't know, it looks like someone sat down somewhere and said, parliamentarians are incompetent people who don't go through these things, and they can just come and present things here and then they will pass like that. And we're not going to be taken advantage of here, not by staff, not by some private companies. If a need be, all those written submissions and recordings, you must bring them here. We'll go through them one by one, because people should not take advantage of their admin roles to push certain narratives here. So can we make the recordings of the hearings if possible? Because they were taking videos there. They were recording everything. So we can see it as individual members of the Parliament, as parties, and consolidate what we thought it is the outcome, and then submit per hearing. This is what they said in Skukuni.
this is what they said and what, like that. We can do that. If she and her team are not interested to give us something tangible, which gives a true reflection of what happens. I don't get the feel of what our people said. I can't feel them in this report. And unfortunately, she was in the committee I was in. I can't feel those people. I need to feel them. I need to hear their voices represented in this report.
Mamporo?
Thank you, Coche. I wanted to ask about the written submissions that we received during the public hearings, because I hear here we are talking about the written submissions submitted to a rendered service provider and at our public hearings. Where are those written submissions submitted during the public hearing? I want to agree with the latter speaker, because I wondered every day and I asked my colleagues to say, what is happening here? Because at the end of each public hearing, we don't receive a report that says this is what has transpired during the day. Before we could depart to our respective provinces, I thought maybe we'll get something. We couldn't. You can ask Honorable Mutab. I was wondering almost every day, what are we doing? Because we don't get anything from the staff that is accompanying us almost on a daily basis. Please furnish us with those reports. Thank you.
Yeah, Coach, you want to make a comment?
No. I'm not sure if we need a response from the staff, but I think the note.
Thank you, Chair. I think the report that is presented before us with the recommendations and suggestions that are put, it clearly shows that it doesn't reflect what transpired in the public hearing. So in that sense, it will be difficult for us to even accept this preliminary report. I would suggest, again, Chair, that as my Honorable CIC said, in terms of the recordings and materials that are there, we be allowed to be given those, and then on our own, draft the preliminary report that will be presented and see what is there that is the staff are having. So this preliminary report, as it is, it doesn't reflect the true reflection, doesn't have the true reflection of what transpired in the public hearing. That's my submission, Chair. So maybe we'll have, I don't know whether it will be in next week's meeting or we'll have another date where we will then deal with it. It's up to the committee to decide when can we have that thing.
Honourable Kuranov.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hear what everybody is saying, but eventually we're going to have one report.
Yes.
You know, after the public hearings, after the submissions, the written submissions, and after the sessions we've had throughout the provinces. I think what is fair is to ask, this is being circulated, and every political party will now have the duty to make comments and to make their inputs, and we can take that into account.
Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Chair. I want to support the Honourable Malema and suggest that we have access to the written submissions and to the recordings taken at all the hearings. There were two streams. We didn't hear everything, we only heard half. I would certainly like to be able to get a feel of what happened in the other stream as well.
All right, let's just move to that item, because it's the next item, the presentation on access to documents. What you wanted to make.
But before you go there, Chief,
yeah.
I don't know, because really our staff component was not very helpful in those hearings. I don't know how you're going to be dealing with that, because these people they're always there in their numbers, full in a kumbi. There are too many there, you don't know what they are doing there. Secondly, the type of sound systems that were hired there, you will want to know how much Parliament paid for that sound system in almost all those places we went to. Thirdly, there was a public hearing in Mpumalanga where it was extremely, extremely cold with old people and all that without any type of intervention by Parliament to get heaters or anything of that sort. It was so embarrassing. And it is those types of things that if we don't come back to them, they will discourage our people from participating in those things of public hearings, including catering, just an effort to feed those people. Our people, other people may not know, old people in our African arrangement, once they hear there is a meeting, they come very early. Even if you say the meeting is 9 o'clock, they will be there at 6 o'clock. They're not given water, they're not given anything. And this is called a people's parliament. And look what happens. When you who have salaries come to a meeting here, there is food here. But the people who must make submissions and sit there throughout to get their chance to make submissions, they are not given basic things to encourage maximum participation in these public hearings. It might not be related to this, but we may have to find a way of dealing with some of those things, particularly on staff members, Honorable Chair. I mean, Nandi's report is not shocking me. I expected this because I've seen them in action.
Honorable?
No, thank you, Chair. On the matter of the meeting next week, I wanted to make both co-chairs that the NSOP is taking Parliament to the people in the first stage, unless a logistical arrangement might be made for those members to come and attend that meeting. I just wanted to caution them.
Thank you.
Co-chairperson? Yeah. Well, I think to try and wrap this one up, we must try and get all the electronic recordings that are available. We'll get them if it means we must all sit in a room or make a room available for members to go and take notes. We will do that. We will ask the staff if it's possible to do that. It should be possible. In terms of the written submissions, there are hard copies, there are emails, and all that type of stuff in terms of the written submissions. I'm not sure when members say they want to look at the written submissions, if you're ever going to be able to go through all of them between now and next week, Wednesday. Because that was the initial decision we took, that it was next week, Wednesday. So when we make these demands, let us bear in mind these type of things. But they should be available. They should be available, all the written submissions. I was just cautioning on that matter. But can we agree how we take this thing forward and move on without opening it up for debate? Because clearly, we're not finalizing it here. You still want to say something, Ma?
Chair, I was saying there were written submissions that were made during the public hearings. Remember, there was a period where was allowed for written submissions. But during the public hearings, there were written submissions made, and there were many. Even though we saw that one letter was copied 2,000 times, but there were many. What is going to happen? What's going to happen with those? We need to take a decision. And also, my point is that all those written submissions must be provided to us. We need to see what is in it. Thanks.
Let's not complicate this thing. I'll come to you, Comrade Floyd. Let's not complicate this thing. There was a closing date for written submissions. We said when people were giving us written submissions in the public hearings, we will take them from you, we will quarantine them, they will not be used in terms of this report. Unless the committee comes with a different view, that is the view. So when honorable members speak, maybe you should come with suggestions, because it's our product. Nobody has answers for us. Let's take Floyd and we'll come to you, Ma, and to Honorable Carter. But let's wrap this one up. What do we do with this report, like we did with the first one, and move on?
Just to wrap up is that, one, we have agreed that with regards to the earlier report, we're going to get the company to come and summarize the preliminary report. Then two, we must give an access to all the written submissions. So so that we can be able to as well verify some of the information that will be provided. You must not just be told it's 80,000 vis-a-vis 60,000. We will utilize our own capacity in that regard. And then in terms of this report that has been submitted on the oral public hearings, we are going to make written submissions to augment it, because it looks like those that were supposed to finalize it to reflect what was said didn't do the perfect job. We'll then make submissions. We can make it easier. We'll go public hearing to public hearing to say that in Skukune this is what happened, in Citrus Dal this is what happened, and this is the sentiment that came out of that meeting. And then we'll then be able to augment the report that will be reflective of the public hearings themselves, and then we'll then consolidate it in the next meeting as well. I don't think that will be a problem with that.
Thank you, Chair. Just on a point of clarity, I actually, maybe it's semantics, there were no written submissions that were submitted at the oral hearing. What was submitted were people's notes. No, don't argue with me because I was there.
Order.
Allow
her to speak. Don't allow her to speak.
I'm talking about my experience. Sorry.
No, talk to me, Chief. Talk to me, don't talk to them.
Yeah. I'm not a chief.
Talk to me, Honourable Member.
Thank you. What I'm saying is, what we allowed in our committee, or what the chairperson allowed, where if a person had written notes and they felt that they hadn't finished in the 3 minutes that were given, then they could submit those notes. And he specifically said, these are notes, not written submissions.
No. That might be the experience where you were. I think what the Honourable Member was saying is the experience where we were. There were actually written submissions made. And I'm trying to clarify that point that says, those written submissions, ma'am, we had said they must be, we took them, because we can't throw them in the street, but they are quarantined. So if Group A didn't have written submissions, that's fine. It's fine. So all we're saying is the principle is, after the 15th, no written submissions will be considered. After the 15th. Can we then, Bob?
No, Chair, I agree with you that the written submissions were closed. Whether they are submitted as what or what, there's no such a thing. They were entertaining oral submissions from our communities.
Thank you very much. So we will make available an environment for members to supplement the report that was given. Every political party and every individual would be able to go and do their own homework, whether you go to the written submissions, whether you go to the recordings. We all will have to agree upon is a time frame when we get to the program. By when must this thing be given so that we have a report that we can discuss? But we've agreed on how we're going to deal with the public submissions. Can we move on that matter? The next item. Honourable Carter wants to say something.
Sorry, Chief, but you actually did recognise me, my name earlier. Listen, I think just for us to give our submissions as well, although I've got recordings of most of Group B, I would like to get the recordings from Group A. So when can that be made available to us from Parliament's side? Because I've requested, you know, if we can get those recordings from Group A and B from Parliament, because it's not all available on YouTube, that would assist. Thank you so much.
That's what we said. We said when we do our program, we'll make that available in terms of the time for all submissions. No, but that's why I was suggesting, Honourable Carter, let's get to the program, because that will inform us on the urgency. But the principle of making these things available, it has been agreed upon to members, yes.
No, we're not saying within... Are you saying within a time frame, Honourable Carter? There is a time frame of the program when we report into Parliament. That's the only time frame we have. But access to these things is an arrangement of the on when members would like to go and do that. That's what we agreed to do.
I hear what you are saying, but what I'm saying is that we...
Let's get to the next item. This thing might be clarified too when we present the program as well.
That's fine. Thank you.
With due respect, point of order, we are not going to allow Honourable Carter to insult you. You are our presiding officer. She must withdraw what she's saying now. You can't. You must have respect.
both, but Honourable Smith is acting like a school principal or a school teacher.
No, that's fine.
Well, this on record now, it is on record.
No, that's fine. Honourable Carter, I'll continue to act like a school principal because I'm chairing this meeting. I will do it unapologetically. That is my role as the chairperson of this meeting.
If people stop behaving like school kids, they won't see a school principal.
It's fine. Let's go back. Let's continue. We've got other business in the house. Honourable members, there's two agenda items left, and I think we probably dealt with the first one. The first one, we just needed your guidance. We've continuously been receiving requests from journalists that are here and others who wanted to have sight of the written submissions. Our take is that because it's work in progress, those things have not been formally tabled here, we are working on it. They can only get access to it when it's formally tabled and certified. But also, because there are so many of them, let us allow members to process them totally as you've now suggested. Once we've done that, we should be able to say to all South Africans, you can view them. We wanted your guidance on that one, in terms of how do we allow access to these thousands of documents that are lying there. Our view is, let's conclude the process and members of the public and the media can have access to them like everybody else. Only after we have completed doing our work with it. But we want your guidance. Honourable Malem.
Chair, I think we must agree they must have them. And when they have them, when you are ready, when we are ready, we give it to them. They will know that they cannot have what we are still compiling ourselves. So we don't want to give them some messy thing. When they come to you for questions, you have not seen the document yourself. You are unable to speak to it. So the principle is that they will have access. Everybody will have access. It's a public process, not a secret. Let them have access to everything else. Once we are ready, let's give it to them.
Siyabonga. All right. That is clarified. That's fine. That's how we will deal with it. And I'm sure our colleagues are here and they'll respect the decision. Honourable members, Honourable Sultan.
Chair, we've just agreed that members will have free access to these written submissions and the like. I foresee a possibility that Party A, once they have got this in their possession, they could very well make them available to the media. As long as we'll have the understanding that it's not the Parliament that has released it, it's that particular party. Thank you.
No, we agree. There's no crisis with that one. I think the principle is that the media will get it formally from the committee once all committee members have processed them and exhausted them. Honourable members, we up to date have identified, you'll recall that when we asked for written submissions, we had asked people to indicate if they wanted to give oral submissions. You have a list there. We tried to categorise them into the different disciplines, agriculture, academics, advocacy groups and so on. To date, there's about 30 of them. Because we need to take a decision in preparation for the oral submissions that must go. We can't wait until it's done. We are proposing to this House that the entire list that you've received be invited. There's about 30 names on that list. If you take out the departments, I'm not talking about the departments here, but the agriculture and all those, you have the list. These people have indicated that they want to supplement their written submissions by oral submissions as well. We've made a week available for oral submissions. We're proposing that all 30 are allowed to come and speak, but we'll open it up for comment. Are honourable members with us? First of all, you've all got the document. Yes, all right. We will then open it up for you in terms of what we want to do. We'll start with you, Honourable Member, then we'll come to Lottridge, and then we'll come to Gwernoff, and then we'll come to Swartz. Yes, ma'am.
Just a question from me, Chair. Is there not a possibility that there may be others because the written submissions have not been finalised?
Chair, that was also my question, and also just... how did people indicate? It could be a possibility that on the submission they indicate, and we haven't looked at it yet.
That's okay. Chairperson is just
just on the principle whether we will allow political parties to come. Because I see on that list there are two or three political parties that wants to bring submissions. And I think it's unfair to the public. They sit on this committee, they can serve on this committee, they can have press conferences on in terms of their submissions. Are we not now disallowing the public if we allow a political party who are represented in Parliament to come in front of us? Just a question. I don't think we should support it.
Well, just on that latter issue, Chair, that's always been a practice. When we had the floor crossing, when we've always heard, even if you sit on the committee, political parties across the board have always made submissions as well. I remember the ANC, I remember other parties making submissions. But the issue is whether all political parties that ask for making submissions or have been requested that opportunity. Now, see, we have been and we will make use of that opportunity. But what I would like to ask as far as it goes to the religious organizations, I am aware of Every Nation's group of churches that made a very important submission, that they asked also to make an oral submission, and I would ask that their name be added. The Catholic Church, I understand, and I speak under correction, but they represent millions of people. Whether they normally always, the Catholic Bishops' Conference always makes an oral submission. So could we look at those additions if they did ask for oral submissions? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, I agree with the proposal that political parties must be allowed to come and make a submission, even if they are not on the list. But the second thing which I thought was something that was going to be dealt with differently was that people make written submission, then there are public hearings, then there is another process where you ask to come and present even if you have not made a submission. For instance, Chair, there might be people who have made a written submission who don't want to come and talk. They think their submission is sufficient. And there might be people who didn't want to make a written submission. They wanted to come and speak to us. Or a submission in a parliamentary setup like this. I don't know how we can handle that. I thought we should be amenable to opening it up. On top of those that we have listed here, if there are still those who want to come and make a submission, oral submission in this type of a setup, perhaps we should allow them to come and make such a submission, especially if it is recognizable bodies with a particular constituency and all of that. Not individuals, but recognizable bodies. We may want to consider that.
Umlana and Maile.
I have a different view. I'm worried about opening up a can of worms. Let's start with the political organizations. Political organizations that are not in parliament, I would agree. But those that are in parliament, who participate, who are here, who actually during the public hearing, some of them came in and made their submissions. And also, they made their verbal submissions. They are part and parcel of this process. Shouldn't be allowed again. We've got a problem. We've got a time factor here. We must end up, I don't know when, according to this program, by the 20th of September. And that's just around the corner. And if we have to do that, we can't do justice to that. I think the political parties are well represented and their views are heard and unknown. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. Whilst I agree with Honorable Mumlwane on the issue of political parties, I want to check on the issue of departments. Are you saying departments should also come and present? Because if that is the case, I have a different view.
because I think if we say department must come here and present, we run the risk of having technocrats coming here not representing anybody.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. Chairperson, on the issue of political parties, I would like to align myself with my Honorable Bumwana and the Honorable Gorenhof. That will result in sort of double dipping, benefiting unfairly so. Especially those who are represented here in Parliament. So I propose that we take it as it is, as proposed. And then secondly, on issue of individual churches, as mentioned by Honorable Swart, I don't think that will be fair. Because if we have more than, let's say for argument's sake, more than 1 million churches here in South Africa. So if he says that he made mention of about four, let's go for, I think they might be having a representative body, a recognized body, like SACC, South African Council of Churches, or South African Interfaith Council of Council, yes, which represents, and with South African Interfaith Council, it's even better because it's only, not only based on Christianity, a certain religion. It takes all the religions, Muslims, traditional, charismatic, and so forth, into consideration. So I propose that we don't look for individuals. Let's say for I've seen elsewhere, we have 1,500 senior traditional leadership here in South Africa. And kings, not less than 12. Headmen, not less than 50,000. So if we say, like we take the same principle as in church as proposed by Honorable Fund, that will fail. But the National House of Traditional Leaders, two, one member coming as in our program, that will be fine. A recognized body, not individual. Thank you.
Honorable Shivambo, followed by Honorable Monsekha.
No, Chair, wanted to propose that the government should not come and make presentation, like, because government is represented by the political parties here. And you must take cognizance of the parliamentary program, which is going to be adopted tomorrow in the programming committee. So Parliament is going to arise on the 11th of September, and then it will come back on the 8th of October in terms of the current parliamentary program. I think we must take that into cognizance in terms of how, and we raised it in the Chief Youth Forum that we are scheduled to table a report to the National Assembly on the 20th. So we might need to try to align that. Either like, you as the leadership of the committee meet with the speaker or the deputy speaker or the chair of chairs to see how to align this, because it is the National Assembly that mandated us to deal and the National Council of Provinces. And now there seem to be some programming clashes in terms of by when. And of course, due consideration can be given to tabling the report in the fourth quarter, in the fourth part of this parliament, which will be in October, and so that we have a much more qualitative and exhaustive report that should have been deliberated upon, and everyone else will be satisfied that they made their submission, they made their point, and then we'll take it from there. But let's move.
Honourable Musa.
Co-chairpersons, I think we also have to understand the institutions that we're dealing with. What do we mean by government? This is a multi-party democracy. Political parties are represented in this government. in this parliament, and therefore government is represented already, and this committee is an organ of parliament on which political parties represented in parliament are here. And the purpose of this process is to listen to the people, not to listen to ourselves. So it will be unfair for people who must listen to the public to listen to themselves. And therefore, I want to agree with the Honorable Mutapo and others that political parties and government should not be heard. Lastly, I want to agree with Honorable Mutapo again that the South African Interfaith Council is a council that is representative of all faith-based organizations, Hindus, Muslims, Christians, traditional religions, all of them. And on the 6th of August, they had a national symposium where they all met. So it's better that we give them a hearing as a formation, because if we give them a hearing as individuals, then we may have 2,000 of them coming before this committee, and therefore that will make the work of this committee unworkable. Thank you.
Honorable Klimbi, followed by Feltana and Honorable Malema. But we are now at 2:30. The bell will be ringing soon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as we are aware that we don't have enough time, and also we must avoid the duplication. We have the public hearing. Public hearing was including traditional leaders, church leaders, everybody was there in our participation. I'm running away of identifying the groups of church. In South Africa, I'm leading plus minus 6.8 million alone. I'm not part of any association of the church. So which means we have to call the churches here to come. How many churches that we have? But members were there, members of the church were there participating in our public hearing. Otherwise, I mean, I'm not part of the Hindus or whatever. I'm alone in my church. I'm telling you, Chairperson, if we can consider churches, there are a lot of churches in South Africa. Thank you very much. I think let's forget about the churches, because we had a public hearing. We called everybody. I remember when in our group there were chiefs, there were questions, they were leaders of the church, they spoke there. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad that I'm speaking after Honorable Klimbi. We are going to land ourselves into a serious constitutional crisis if we're going to be talking about recognized churches. Who recognizes them? Which piece of legislation tells us who is supposed to be recognized and who is not supposed to be? It's perfectly correct to say that, and I was in his group. Indeed, there were many church representatives there. There were many traditional leaders. There were many concerned people. Why didn't they go there? We need to define where we draw the line. I would suggest, therefore, Chair, that we say, if we want to open up an opportunity for institutions, put it that way, to listen to them here in Parliament, it should be a question of those that requested, and we have a closing date on that. Otherwise, if we examine their constitution, we'll never end up anyway. Let's just draw the line to say those that requested, and if they were not at the public hearings, then we can accommodate them. Otherwise, we'll never finish this process. Thank you.
Yeah. We're taking only the last three hands now that we've noted, Honorable Malema, Swartz, and Carter.
No, Chair, I'm persuaded on the political parties. that we go with the ones that are not here. Those of us who are here will speak on behalf of, we've got all types, including if you are not here, you are in the National Assembly, you will still get your opportunity there, so we're fine. I don't understand even why the department made submission on whose behalf. So because I see them at least here, including a reserve bank, they want to talk about what, on whose behalf would they want, because we are here to talk about on behalf of the people as political parties, including this, all these formations we are talking about. So, department must not be allowed to participate in this process. Thanks.
Swartz Carter.
Chair, I accept the majority view as far as political views are concerned. If that is the majority view, I don't mind. But I want to say on the issue of religious organizations, those are organizations that made written submissions and asked for an oral submission. The cutoff date is there. Let's stick at that decision. That's the end of the story. And that's why those three names that I made mention of, they made written submissions within the cutoff time and they asked to make oral submissions. That's all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Kata.
Chair, thank you. Mine is along the same lines. It is not for us to reopen our whole process. The written submissions closed. The ones that indicated that they wanted to do a submission in Parliament, those are the ones who are invited. We cannot reopen the whole process. And I also accept, although we said in public hearings that political parties will have an opportunity here, I accept it if that's the majority. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair.
Are there religious organizations that are not yet in this list?
No, before he answers, Honorable Chair, I was saying if they are religious leaders, it doesn't even need a response. If there are religious leaders that have made submissions and indicated that they want to come and make an oral submission, they must be allowed.
Yeah.
So if there was such a mistake, he can bring it to the chairperson's attention. The chairperson will check with the staff. They will go back to those things and then confirm that indeed they made a submission. They said they want to come, and let's do it like that. Is there 100%.
Absolutely. That was the proposal that we were going to make. Because remember, we are saying this is work in progress. If next week we find that there's a name that is not here, but who had asked for it, let's be flexible to put that name here. So we are putting the question again. These that we've already identified, minus political parties, minus government departments, can we proceed to get them to come and give presentations?
Sure, we don't.
No, yes, we agree to that.
No, not.
Now, I'm saying, sir, some of us don't have the list you've got there.
Aye, Baba. You'll get the list. It's because you came late. You'll get the list. But the principle is we're going to invite these people minus those that we've said. Because we need to have some work done.
All right. Co-chairperson, just on the program.
Okay. Yeah. Can we then deal with the program, honourable members? We'll amend it, obviously, based on this discussion. The starting point is that we're going to have another committee meeting next week. You have the program before you. If you look at the program, there was no meeting scheduled for next week. We'll have to include a meeting where we're going to call the service providers. And we are suggesting it's the same time on Wednesday from 12:30 to 3. Otherwise, it must be after hours. We then have allowed for oral submissions for those days that are there. We will prepare for these 30 that we have here and any others that come to come and see us on those days that are here, honorable members. And then we'll do our deliberations once we finish the oral submissions. We'll come back and look at the final report, take the oral submissions into account, and have our own one. Now, there was the issue raised by Honorable Floyd. I don't know, Honorable Floyd, if you're still pursuing that one. That my view is, let us try and finish in these time frames. If indeed there's a need for an extra week, we can then go and ask for it. But for all intents and purposes, this is the program we're going to work on. Agreed? Oh, and then there's the issue of the NCOP matter, I beg your pardon, that the NCOP are away next week, where we were going to then sit and... Next week we're only going to have one meeting, which is the meeting of the service provider. So can we then, if NCOP are not available and they want to be here, instead of having it next week Wednesday, can we have it the other week but in the evening when you get back? Is that okay? Happiness? Oh, okay. We will then amend the we are taking this as adopted with the one amendment of adding a meeting sometime when the NCOP comes back.
Yeah. Honourable members, thank you very much for your time. It's been fruitful in helping the Secretariat and us. Thank you very much for your time. As the meeting stays adjourned.